for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 419 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week, it's the return of Andrew Burkett, and he's got a brand new comic coming out called Sam's Scams. I always say that humor is some of the most difficult writing to do, and Andrew does a wonderful job on this book, made me laugh out loud a lot of the times, and he's fun to talk with, too. So we have a great conversation about the book as well as the other things that he's up to. We talk about who Sam is, about where Sam comes from, and what kind of things he's up to here on the planet Earth. Andrew takes us places that at least I've never been before, and does it superbly. He talks about when the book will be available and how you can access it, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. I'm happy to welcome back to the podcast Andrew Burkett, the creator of a great book that just entertained me like crazy called Sam's Scams. I see you described as chief storyteller of Atheris Entertainment, writer and board game designer. Is that accurate?
Yep, that is accurate.
Okay, very good. So I saw you up at Daytona Beach Comic Con a couple months back. And stuff. I think the first time I saw you, you were up in like Georgia or something, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I had worked on, we talked the last time for Tokyo Rose Zero Hour with my friend Andre Fortino. Mm-hmm. And Andre lives in Savannah, so I went and promoted that, and I saw you in Savannah.
Yeah, now the funny thing is you're actually not far from where I live in Central Florida.
I live right by UCF.
Yeah, I live out in one of the suburbs, so it's always kind of entertaining to me. Central Florida, there's something about Florida, the state, that just is a big comics haven. There are so many creators and people who are interested in comics. When I came here, I really thought, oh man, there's going to be nobody interested in comics. But instead, there's this huge, flourishing community that goes on, and it's great fun.
Yeah, it's been awesome. I have always kind of been into comics, but I didn't really get too heavily into it, and I started reading a lot more indie stuff, and I've been buying way too many comics. My wife's probably not too happy about how many I've been buying recently.
I always tell people when I go to cons, it used to be I'd buy action figures because that's the only place I could really find them. But now I go to cons and I buy indie books just like you're talking about. I go there to find stuff I can't find anywhere else. And like I said, Daytona, I bought a couple of your books up there when I saw you. So that was cool stuff. So your writing is always interesting to me because this is your first comic, though, with my understanding, right?
Yeah, so I've written for magazines and I write novels and all that kind of stuff. But I started at my kind of professional career with board games while in college. I created Atheris Entertainment, which started as a board game company. And then I worked with Andre on Tokyo Rose and realized like I really love comic books and should probably start writing them. I had just never done it because I am not an artist. And so with novels, it was like obvious. I'm a writer. I just write this and I get one cover illustration. That's easy. But with a comic, there's so much more involved. And so I was like, I don't know that I have the skill set to do that. And then once I worked on the Kickstarter end of a project, I realized, all right, well, if other people are doing this, maybe I just need to get more immersed into this community and then I can meet the people and figure out how to do it. So that's what I did.
Well, cons are very good places to meet people within the industry because, you know, you get tables and you might be positioned next to somebody who is an artist, you know, and you might start talking and you might develop some kind of friendship, and down the road, you never know, that works into a comic book.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a I've found that there's so many great avenues to meet people now, and like with the internet, like so many of the artists I meet, I just find in these online communities, and they just share a burning passion to do whatever, you know, that also interests me. So with board games and comic books and any kind of creative realm, I found these artists that really had the same desires and motivations as I do. And I think that's kind of incredible. And I've worked with some local people as well, but it's crazy, like the amount of people you can reach that, you know, previously you wouldn't have been able to just be like, oh, I'll talk to this guy in the Philippines and he'll do all the artwork for me.
Yeah. Well, the book that I help with is Stabity Bunny, and the writer lives in Central Florida. The artist lives on the top of a mountain in North Carolina, and the colorist lives in the Philippines.
Yeah.
They've never been in the same room.
It's kind of crazy to me because, like, for my board game company, the main graphic designer I work with has worked on every single one of my projects with me, and he lives in Argentina, so I've never met him. And I, like, it's always been a thing. I've always been like, once I have enough money, I'm going to go meet you. I'm going to fly to Argentina to meet you.
So that's the good thing about it is, and they're talking, these guys in the book that I help with, I'm the editor there, and they're talking about getting together sometime. And I think that would be a good thing because they've been doing comics now for 4 or 5 years.
That's awesome.
That's great stuff. So, okay, Sam Scams, your first comic that you've written. Somebody doing the art for you?
Yep. So Travis Martinez has been doing the artwork for me. He is based out of the Philippines. I found him on one of the Facebook communities, and I decided to work with him on a few pages, and I really enjoyed the work he did. He has a colorist that he works with that has did the coloring for it. So
now, before we dive into the book itself, are you going to Kickstarter this? Is that what's happening?
Yeah, so last time we had kind of talked about this a little bit, but I've done just about $100,000 on Kickstarter at this point. I've raised more since the last time we talked. I did another successful board game project that raised about $20,000. So I'm definitely very proficient, I feel like, at Kickstarter, and I'm definitely learning more and more every time I've launched projects. I've done 6 now. And so I will probably keep using Kickstarter until I don't have to anymore. I'm definitely still at the small stages where it takes too much investment. I just graduated college a few years ago, and my wife's pregnant. And so I don't have the financial resources to go about it. And so Kickstarter is obviously an excellent platform for allowing creators like me to still be able to do what we want and make several projects at the same time without having to worry about, oh no, the cash flow with this project, I'm not going to be able to work on the next thing and for another year or two until that one's done, kind of thing. So I'm able to do a few board games and comics kind of all at the same time.
Very good, because I'm a big fan of Kickstarter. There's so many wonderful things that I find out there that just amaze me. And they're just great things. So do you know when your Kickstarter project's going to start?
I was planning on doing it at the end of February, early March. It will kind of depend. I'm having a few editors look at the book. I just want to make sure that everything's perfect before going to Kickstarter. I'm a perfectionist, and I definitely like to have, like, with my board games, I kind of learned a few times the hard way that when I didn't have artwork and everything developed prior to the Kickstarter campaign, it requires a lot of work on the, you know, post campaign, and it made the time for delivery longer and all that kind of stuff. And so I like to go to Kickstarter with 100% completed product. So I want Sam Scams to be 100%. And what, you know, when you back the Kickstarter, the second it funds, I'm going to be printing the comic, basically.
Great. Well, that'd be good. That'd be great. Cause the important thing is to, you know, be ahead of the game, because every time you're not ahead of the game, that's when things go wrong.
Yeah.
So, because there's so many times I've seen people say, well, I thought I had it all together, and then all of a sudden this thing blew up in my face, and then I had to try to do it. There are some people I've Kickstarter supported that I have never gotten stuff from. So.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. It doesn't happen a ton, but it definitely does happen, and it makes me and other Kickstarter creators sad, because it definitely hurts the reputation of the platform, and it's done such excellent things for a lot of creators who, you know, have the right interest in mind and are able to make products, but sometimes it's not even disingenuous. Sometimes creators just kind of bite off more than they can chew and take on ambitious projects and then kind of realize later they messed up. And unfortunately, I see that a lot with like shipping errors, or people will not realize that shipping is super, super expensive and they lose a crazy amount of money on their Kickstarter, not able to deliver it. So.
Not good, not good. So the date's not completely final yet. If people want to know, you know, catch up on that and find out when that becomes firm, what's the best way for them to find these things out and like to follow you on like social media?
Yeah, so atherisentertainment.com, we have a newsletter that they can sign up for our email list. I'm definitely going to be posting it on there. On Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, we also have Atheris Publishing and Atheris Entertainment. So the publishing division does the comic book stuff, and entertainment's kind of a catch-all that includes our board game and all of the other various projects we're working on. And then Sam Scam has a Facebook page. I don't make individual pages for the comics for other social media, but it kind of just... even the Facebook page kind of just routes to the other social media, so I don't have to upkeep as many.
Well, that's good. That's a smart way to do it. Because I always see little apps and stuff that say they're going to take care of that, but then when I try to do it, I can never get it to work right. So I do it all myself. I install it, and when a podcast comes out, I send it like 8 different platforms trying to get the word out on those kinds of things. So someday I'll find something that'll do it all for me, and I won't have to worry about that.
Yeah.
Good luck with that. So, Sam Scams, I have to tell you, is unlike anything I've ever read before. And I've been reading comics for a long time.
Well, I appreciate that. I definitely feel like I think differently than a lot of people. And it was a weird comic for me to write because I was talking with one of my friends who works with Source Point Press, and I was telling him about wanting to get into comic books because he owns a board game company called Deep Water Games. And so I was talking to Nolan and was like, hey, I would love to hear what kind of stuff you're interested in, because I would like for you to eventually publish my stuff through Source Point. And so I was talking to him a little bit about it, and I told him like what I normally write in novels is like serial killer and mystery kind of novels, and he was like, yeah, we would totally be interested in that. And so like that's my cup of tea. That's like bread and butter. That's what I like writing. And then for some reason I just decided that I had this weird story in my head that couldn't get out of my head, and I was like, I'm gonna write that first before I write anything for anyone else. And I just started writing it, and Sam Scams what came out of that weird story in my head.
Well, I have to tell you, you flip the script on a lot of things. I mean, whenever there are aliens involved, aliens are usually saintly, what's a good word to say it, advanced, wish we could be like them kind of beings. You know, unless you're a bad alien, and then you're a ruthless, cruel syndicate. This one, what you've done is you've taken... there is some ruthlessness to this character, but there's a lot of stuff that I have never seen an alien do before. He smokes marijuana, for one thing, which was the first thing that made me smile. That is so unusual. I have never seen an alien smoke marijuana before in anything I've ever read. That was the first thing that really stood out to me. And then the place he comes from is like our world in reverse. You know, we don't want, you know, there's pollution and stuff. We're striving to get rid of it. You know, we worry that people are making too much pollution. His home world is just the opposite. And you get a very important clue right at the beginning of the book when he says, oh, I am stuck on this godforsaken planet. And it's just and it looks like beautiful place. I mean, we'd all like to kind of live there. And then he said, this is my home world. I'd rather be there. And it's like a garbage dump, you know. And I was like, okay, this is not going to go the way I'm used to. This is going to be something very different. And I love that stuff about him. The way he's designed, too, makes me laugh. His nostrils look like they're on the top of his head. And he's got like an arrow pointing down like the Last Airbender did. So all that stuff kind of made me – he's thin and he's orange kind of, which was another thing that was something that I haven't seen before. So, and he's here trying to make a buck.
Yeah. So, Travis did very well with that. I kind of told him my idea for the alien, and I like to give artists a lot of creative freedom, so I wasn't very particular about it, but was like, I need him to look way different from what you would expect an alien to look like, because I want this to be clear how different it is. I needed it to be like, I wanted him to be a shape where it kind of showed that he could morph himself a little bit, because he wears these human suits to kind of fit in and not show himself as an alien. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to, you know, him to be kind of this eccentric character, and was kind of going for like the trans metropolitan kind of, you know, crazy character.
I like the name of the people are called the Logards. Right away we have the word low, the syllable, first thing is low.
Yeah.
Logards. And then there's a sentence, there's one place where we see their world, and there's a sentence that stood out to me. It says, our planet's very core is built upon dirty diapers and soiled ruins. I've never seen anything like that in all the stuff I've ever read. I just had to sit there and smile. I'm going like, good grief. See, like I said, you flip the script on a lot of this stuff, because I'm not used to it. In fact, I think there's an alien in that same page, and it looks like he's got a dirty diaper on his head. Is that what he's wearing?
Yeah, so a lot of the idea of the story was that you have Sam, and he's this crazy alien who's set out on a mission to scam the world's most valuable people, which in his mind is the elderly, because in his planet, that's who are, you know, the respected elders. Then he comes to Earth and quickly realizes that the elders don't really matter too much here. So he's just scamming elderly people in the villages to make money. But it kind of along the way, you learn about some of his crazy schemes and what he's kind of trying to do, and that his planet has been built upon the Earth's trash for centuries, and they're not wanting to ever get past that. They want to live with their trash, and they're happy with how their civilization works. The idea is to kind of, over subsequent issues, kind of explain that he might not know really who he's working for and what their ultimate goal is, and it might not really go with his culture and some of the things he wants.
It's just amazing, because, you know, every time I've ever read a sci-fi book, this is the place they won't go. They won't go there, because, you know, this is not what aliens do. Aliens, like I said, are just perfect people, and, you know, this doesn't happen. And so the interesting thing is that, like, one thing I did want to ask about, this is set in the future.
Yeah, it's set in the future, slightly. Mm-hmm. And the future and, you know, the storyline progresses over several years, so it kind of flips back and forth a little bit, and shows his training on his home planet of how he trained to scam these elderly people, and he starts with scamming people in casinos, and so it goes over kind of his training of there and all that kind of stuff, and then kind of goes back to the present, which is, you know, future from us here.
Well, I like the fact that the guy that made this casino is another Logard, and he's very successful at it. Which I wouldn't. You know, American business is not something aliens are usually very good at. I just, you know, every time. And then he's at another place where he's talking. He's got this guy he wants to be a partner with, but in the sense he wants to be like a business partner. And he goes up to try to find out about this guy, to talk to the three women that he was talking to. And they're very put off, because he's not quite interested in the things that they seem to want to be interested in. So it's kind of funny how, you know, again, this is, you know, this is not the way things normally go. I mean, there's going to be sexual stuff involved. It's going to be they're so heavily into it that, you know, the women are like, oh my God, where have you been all my life kind of stuff. So to have this go this direction, again, I just, every time I turn the page, I'm going, now what? I have no idea what's going to happen next. It's just the most amazing thing. It's just, I tell you something, this is just... And then, of course, there comes the time when he's, the whole thing with the partner comes to fruition, shall we say. I don't want to spoil it because I think it's kind of, it's a funny bit. This, he, and then he does, oh, he does all this typical Earth type stuff. You know, he's trying to get away, the police are after him, and he does all kinds of crazy stuff, and he manages to outflank the police, but let's just say it doesn't turn out the way he wants it to turn out. I will leave it at that. But I got a huge kick out of that. And then, of course, because that it takes him a while to get over it, and by that time, let's just say some things have gone all to smash, shall we say. So I got a huge kick out of that. So he decides to move on and do some other stuff. And the thing I'm fascinated by is this... I've got there's 31 pages in the version I saw. Is this the whole book, or is there going to be more pages coming for this?
So the idea was to that's going to be the first issue. I do plan on doing more issues, and I want to continue the storyline. So I've already written a majority of what will be the second issue. Haven't got it illustrated yet. I'm waiting until I see what the reception is on the first one. I obviously like writing crazy things, and a lot of my games are based on that, but I never want the like vulgar and crazy Adult Swim kind of esque cartoon vibe. And so this was my first kind of foray into that, as well as comic books, but I thought that it fit the medium well, and I could make it funny, and I wanted to make a funnier script, especially I've had a lot of more serious stuff in my life recently, and I wanted something that would poke fun and be humorous and could kind of showcase that side of me more. I wanted to just make this outlandish script and, you know, see what people think, basically.
Because this is so... It's outrageous on some levels. That's what made me laugh out loud a couple of places. There were just, because, you know, like I said, this doesn't follow the usual alien thing. When aliens come to Earth, it's like Earth Final Conflict. They set up gorgeous places, and people come to learn from them and all this kind of stuff. That's not what happens in this book. Nothing like that happens in this book. Now, the thing I'm kind of curious about, too, is that is Sam based on somebody?
Not particularly. I didn't really base any of the characters off any particular thing. Like I said, it was kind of just more a weird story in my head of I was kind of thinking about global warming, and I work for a tree farm during the day, and I started getting into gardening, and so I was kind of thinking about that, and I thought, oh, it'd be funny if there was like this negative thing, and what the world sees was actually a positive for some other civilization. Like, they actually want the trash. And so I kind of went off of that idea, and that's kind of what got me to write it. I was thinking, oh, what if there's this alien civilization that wanted our trash?
See, that to me is so out there that I was entertained. I couldn't help but laugh at all, like I said, at this stuff. There were so many good things about this. That, you know, because I always think, why do aliens and mutants all have to be male models or female models or stuff like that? Why can't something be completely different than what we're used to? And that's the tack you're taking with this book. And I have to say, it's refreshing to read. Because, like I said, I did not know what you were going to do from page to page. Because once you've shattered that whole thing, the sci-fi prism that we always look through things, then I don't know what's going to happen next. And that actually makes it a lot more fun to read because, you know, I kept turning the page and going, oh my gosh, not that. Oh no, not that. It was a great read. I had such fun reading it. I do have to ask one thing. And Sam's, he's got like a necklace.
Yeah.
What's on that necklace?
It's box, like the tabs for soda cans.
Oh, pop tops.
Yeah.
I couldn't figure out what it was. I was looking at it going, what is that? Because I couldn't, you know, I thought maybe it was like, you know, normal alien stuff or outrageous, like fingers or stuff like that hanging there. Pop tops.
a lot of his attire, and like he travels at one point in time, and he's taking his luggage, and you can clearly see that he's taking the trash. He's keeping all the rest of the stuff.
Well, he gets someplace and he starts to set up home, and the first thing he does is empty a garbage bag all over the floor.
Yeah, exactly.
I was like, you know, see, all that kind of stuff made me laugh. I had no concept as to what you were going to do. I knew you were not going to go the standard route, but the route you did go was so entertaining and so funny, because honestly, I have to tell you, I've had some friends who were extreme environmentalists. There was one girl I was given a ride to, and she lived in the Washington, D.C. area, and she was at a place where I was, and somebody said, would you give her a ride? And I gave her a ride, and on the way, she said to me that only people that were approved by rabid environmentalists should be allowed to live in Washington, D.C. And I said, oh, really? I said, like who? I said, well, like me. I should be the one to decide that. Oh, I said, okay. And so I always, you know, I try really hard to be environmentally conscious. But after talking with her, I kind of think, I'm not convinced that everybody is, you know, the kind of person that she would do. My brother has a saying that nobody builds a social structure, but they don't put themselves on the top.
Yeah,
that was her thing. Her thing was to be, she should be telling other people what to do, because she was such a rabid environmentalist that she's the only one that really understood. And so that was part of the thing that came to my mind when I was reading this book. I said, this girl would freak if she ever saw this book. She would just screech.
Yeah, probably.
Which was, you know, part of the humor to me was because of that. I got a huge kick out of that. I was thinking, I wonder where she is now. I'd love to send this to her and see her. Yeah. Kind of funny. So I like stuff like that. I love things that are just, like I said, places I haven't been. Because I've been reading comics for a long time. And this was an original book. I'll go then and say that. Because it was just so amazingly interesting and so unexpected. That I think people are going to really enjoy it. People like me who love things that are unusual and travels the roads that we haven't gone before. I love that kind of stuff. And I think there's a lot of us out there. I'm kind of a little bored with standard stuff, to be honest with you. That's why I enjoyed your book so much. There's so many things that everybody goes this predicted route, and to actually sit there and just you know, laugh and chuckle and be surprised as I turn from page to page. I thought that was really a cool thing. Makes me wonder what in the world you got in mind for issue two.
There's some crazy stuff for sure. I mean, I think it's probably the most fun I've had writing anything. I really enjoyed writing it for a few reasons, but I definitely wanted and felt like some myself chuckle when I was writing some of the stuff. And my writing process is probably different than a lot of people. I tend not to know where the story is going page to page. I have some outlines, but normally I am not too structured with them. Like if I decide one page that it's better to change directions, I will, and I end up changing everything. And then Travis was working on the artwork, and the scene with the women was actually supposed to be older women in the nursing home, and he ended up making it like a club scene on accident. And we looked at the description, and he's like, I don't know how I accidentally did that. And I was like, you know what? I think I can make this funnier. I can make it better. I actually just leave it for a second. And then I wrote a few pages before that to like where, you know, that his potential business partner is actually in the nursing home as an older gentleman who decides to go to the club to sell makeup products to these younger women. He's the swindler. And so I was like, that actually makes this character of Jerry, the human who Sam wants to work with a little bit funnier.
Well, I have to say, because you didn't completely go off the unexpected. The fact that there were these women, and some of them are well endowed and, you know, kind of stuff, and his reaction is all the funnier because he's not in tune with what they're thinking. And it makes it hilarious. I mean, I was sitting there just laughing, and he goes, and he says, and they actually yell at him, "Asshole!" at one point, which I found really funny. Had that been older women, I don't think I would have found that quite so funny, to be honest.
Yeah. So that script was definitely a little bit different when it was older women, and I think it ended up changing for the better. I was able to get. I originally didn't have Jerry using like one of those mobile scooters like an old man. Mm-hmm. But when he had to leave the nursing home, I was like, he definitely needs one of those. And then I think it's just all the funnier, like this little old man just driving on a scooter to a club so they can swindle some younger ladies into buying face cream made him a more funny character, and I liked that a lot more.
I was so entertained by that. You know, I don't think it would have been nearly as funny, like I said, to have older women there doing that, and their reaction. I'm sure you wouldn't have played that way if they had been older women.
Yeah, the scripting was a little different originally, but then I once I had the artwork, I was like, this could be funny. I'm going to just change it all. So I changed like 4 pages to make it work.
It was funny. I laughed at parts of it. I got a huge kick out of it. You know, there he is. He's trying to find somebody to swindle. And, of course, they're like, oh, you know, hey, honey, how about I show you a good time? And he's sitting there thinking, why didn't Jerry notice me? Yeah. You know, these girls are going like, what? Why didn't he pay attention to us? You know, kind of stuff. That's what made it very entertaining to me. I love when something doesn't go, like I said, the predictable route, and this didn't go the route that I expected. So I thought that was so much fun. I really laughed out loud with all that stuff because that was really good stuff. Now, are you thinking about SourcePoint Press printing this, or are you going to self-publish, or how are you going to make this available?
Yeah, so this one I'm self-publishing. I don't know if any publishers will be interested after I self-publish on Kickstarter. I definitely would be interested in that, but I didn't kind of mention it to anyone at SourcePoint or anything. I'm still kind of talking to them about if I do one of my other projects, then I would be interested in them taking a look at it.
Well, some printers will do that, though, because like Stabby Bunny, the book that I worked on, Richard Rivera, the writer, he self-published the first 6 issues, and then it got picked up by Scout Comics, and they reprinted them each month, the first 6 issues, and now they're moving on beyond that. And I think Dan Doherty has a book, Touching Evil, which I really love. It's talk about a nightmare. This physical force gets into a man, and when he touches somebody, if they're not purely good, they die, and they go into his consciousness. What happens is a woman ends up inheriting that whole thing. And I just love that book because, again, it was scary as can be, but it's nothing like I've read. I haven't read that
before. Yeah, that sounds like an excellent script.
And interestingly, that got picked up by SourcePoint Press.
Oh, really? That's funny. I'll have to look at that because I like a lot of their stuff, and I know Nolan from the board game stuff, but I started buying their other kind of comics and graphic novels, and I read Franklin and Ghost, and they have a comic called Floppy Cop that mm-hmm. was really funny. And so
that's the same guy. That's Dan Doherty.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I liked it. I liked that one. I like those kind of out there scripts. Like you said, I read a lot of comics now, and a lot of the indie comics I go to are ones that have very, very different idea of how they present their stories. So one I enjoy a lot that is either currently on Kickstarter or just got off Kickstarter is Milky. Mm-hmm. I thought the idea of this milkman having to try to save the world from an alien invasion seemed like a funny script, and I read the first few issues, and it's very well written, and I definitely enjoyed that one, and I like those kind of scripts where they're author thinks, okay, what are classic tropes, and kind of goes against all of them.
Yeah, because, you know, I like I said, I've read for decades comics, and oftentimes I can pick up a comic and I can tell you on the first page what's going to happen in that book. But like I said, your book, I couldn't do that. I could not do that ever. So I, like I said, I like that kind of stuff. I like it when I'm surprised. And there's not a lot of books that surprise me from the what they call the mainstream comic companies. I do like my superheroes, don't get me wrong. I Batman's my guy, and I buy a lot of his good stuff. But I want something variety. I want something different. I want something enjoyable. And I think your book really fits that really well. I'm going to have to keep my eye on this one. I'm going to have to make sure I get on the mailing list and stuff like that for this book, because I want to I want to know what you're going to do after this.
I appreciate that.
So you talked about the board games and stuff. Are you guys, you're obviously still working on board games and good things, right?
Yeah, so I'm still publishing board games. I'm doing more conventions and stuff, kind of promoting both. So the plan is to do both together. So I want to do more comic conventions where I have comics and board games, and I know that there is a crossover between the two industries, which is partially why I wanted to work on both. And then I'm also doing some like board game merchandise stuff, so doing like socks and different things with board game designs, and I might do that with comic books as well, depending on how well that goes with the board game space.
Because I have a friend of mine, like on the fourth Saturday of the month, he gets people together to play board games. And he's done comics and stuff like that in the past too, and we like to play Werewolf by Night. I don't know if you ever played that.
Yeah.
I love that game. One time I was playing, there was only four of us playing it, and they decided that I wasn't the werewolf, but in order to make sure, they had to kill me. And I said, wait a second. I said, that's not right. That's, I know we call that the Wayne Hall rule, that you can't just kill somebody just to make sure, you know. You got to have a better reason than that to do it. But we like to play those kinds of things. And there's an app that you play that tells you what to do while you're doing the board game.
Yeah.
And the game and stuff. So I like all that good stuff. Have you guys ever thought about moving from board games into like apps and digital stuff?
Not really. So the original business plan, when I went to the University of Florida, and while I was there, my original business plan was to make board games and digital games on PC and PlayStation and whatnot. And the kind of spearhead of the idea was video game companies tend to have very long product life cycles and require a lot of capital investment. And board games don't require as much of that. So the kind of goal was to make board game products that would give revenue to the company while it was waiting for its digital games to hit. And then use the board games to kind of merge IPs. So some of the digital games would share the IPs with the board games. And I never ended up doing that, but I am planning on using that kind of same strategy with comic books. So some of the comic books we design are definitely going to turn into board games, and vice versa.
Yeah, that's what my next question was going to be. What about Sam Scams? Is there a possibility that's going to turn into a board game?
There is definitely a real possibility that I will make that into a board game.
Okay, see, I'd like that. That would be a game I'd be interested in playing. I would not know from one move to the next what was going to happen.
Yeah. Never know.
That would be wonderful to play because, again, board games and stuff, some of them are real predictable. I mean, gosh, that's one of the reasons I don't play so many board games, at least haven't for a long time, because I found them really, you know, it's like romantic comedies. They will or they won't, so you got a 50-50 shot. And some board games and stuff, I would just sit there and go, well, you know, it's not making a lot of sense yet, and maybe it never will, but okay. But I'm sure your guys' stuff, especially with you in charge, they're a lot more entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, my games are definitely all out there. But I think board games in the last few years have definitely grown a lot in several aspects. So there's a lot better publishers in terms of quality control and insurance and all that kind of stuff. So the quality of components has really increased a lot over the last few years, and the quality of the gameplay has increased a lot as well. So a lot of the games now, I think, go against some of the games that you probably played and felt that with the last maybe 10 or 12 years now. The board game industry has grown like 10 to 15% a year since 2008. It's over doubled in size since I started in 2013. Wow. So it's a super growing industry, which is cool. It's kind of cool to be in it and see, you know, a lot of like mass media calling it like the board game renaissance. And if you could see the shelf behind me, I have like 100 games. Wow. And I unfortunately have not played all of them. but there's a lot of them that kind of go against the norm, and some of them that are kind of better implementations of some classic games that people are familiar with, that like Clue and those kind of things. So,
If people want to get your games, I mean, how do they do it? Do they go to the same website?
Yeah, so they can find the information about the games on my website, the names and whatnot. They're available for sale at a lot of smaller comic book and board game retailers are able to purchase them. They're the main distributors. We also have them. They're normally for sale on Amazon and those kind of websites as well. I don't sell them personally. I sell entirely through distribution currently. So
that's a smart thing to do. You'd be spending all day long mailing out board games.
Yeah, exactly.
Not a good thing to do. So it's Atheris. Do you want to spell that for people so in case they make sure you get it right?
Atheris. Entertainment.
Okay, so that'd be a good place to go. So that's also a place where we can keep up with Sam's scams and good things like that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so we're going to do that. So, and we've already talked about how you can follow people on social media and they can keep up with your good stuff and sign up for the newsletter that's coming and stuff too. So are there other projects that you're working on that you might be able to talk about at this point?
Currently, I'm really heavily involved with and invested in Sam Scams. I am working with some artists that want to kickstart some comics and anthologies and whatnot, and I might end up helping them with those, but I'm not the writer on that. I might end up writing some other things, but I kind of wanted to release Sam Scams and kind of see how that goes before doing too much other stuff right now.
Okay. Well, I think that Kickstarter, of course, your success with Kickstarter is going to help, you know, moving things forward with that. People are probably, you know, following you on Kickstarter and good things like that.
Yeah.
So that'll help. They'll bring in a lot of people like that.
So. Yeah, I've been fortunate for sure. We had 812 backers of our last game. So I have like 200 or 300 people that follow every time I launch a project. So I'm hoping that at least some of them will end up backing the comic. So
I got to tell you one thing that I think you do extremely well, and that's grammar. I read some indie comics and punctuation is all over the place. You know, I always tell the old bad joke about, you know, there's a difference between let's eat, comma, grandpa, and let's eat grandpa.
Yeah.
Which not everybody gets, because I'll be sitting there reading and I go, oof, it's like a roadblock. I hit this thing and I go, what are they trying to say? Oh, they did they want a comma there? Or what do they want? And I don't dare tell people that too much because too many people want me to edit their stuff.
Yeah.
I get buried under with people who want me to edit things. But your stuff is really well done, I have to say. Only once or twice did I see a comma that I thought should be in there. But other than that, it was right together. Everything was really great. So
well,
I love
thank
that.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Like I said, indie comics, I want to do courses on punctuation for indie comics creators. How to get it right and don't stop people from reading your book.
Yeah, I think a lot of it's about proofreading at several stages. So I've obviously done a lot of digital proofreading, but I'm working with at least one editor, potentially two, to make sure that everything in the final version is good. And then I always print a proof copy before doing any mass manufacturing because I like to ensure if there was supposed to be a comma somewhere, I will catch it when it's in print before it goes to like 1,000 of them made or something crazy.
Well, congratulations, because I can't tell you how many books I read, and I want to go to them and say, will you please get your grammar right? It's not so much that I'm a grammar Nazi, and I probably am, but it's the fact that I can't read it, you know. I can't read it when that kind of stuff is hard to get through. I want it to be a smooth process where I'm in the story instead of wondering why didn't they get their punctuation right.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the thing. So I'm really glad. It's so nice to read that, I have to say. So I'm really encouraged. I think, Andrew, you got some great stuff coming. Is there an update on Tokyo Rose, how that book is coming along, by the way?
Yeah, Andre and Kate are working on it. Everything they've told me is that it's going well. I think Kate still has a few pages left, and then it will go to print.
Really looking forward to it. I think
you'll
enjoy that book. It's going to be really tremendous stuff. Well, Andrew, all I can do is wish you more success, because I think you're doing very well, and things are really going. I think are going to just continue to grow and do well for you as you go along. And when I find out the Kickstarter's out there, I'll be right out there supporting this book, because I think it's just the kind of thing I look for.
I much appreciate that.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
And that's a wrap for this episode. And in coming weeks, I'll have some great interviews, so be sure to be here. But until then, keep reading your comics.